Hi guys, and welcome back to the Killer Crime Podcast. If this is the first time you've heard my voice, my name is Georgia and I co-host this podcast with my cousin Martha. Today is just a solo episode from me though, and I have a case for you guys about one of Britain's most notorious female serial killers. So, here's the case of Beverly Allett, also known as the Angel of Death. So, Beverly Allett was sort of always a bit of a weird child growing up. Born on the 4th of October 1968, she grew up in the village of Corby Glen, near Grantham in Lincolnshire. She was one of four children, and she was the second oldest, and was sort of just typically quite unremarkable. She was a bit chubby, didn't really have any special talents or skills, and so she just tended to be overlooked. That was until she started to exhibit really weird behaviours. Like she would cut herself on glass and end up in hospital a lot of the time. She also started wearing bandages and casts, even though she wasn't actually injured, so that she would draw attention to herself. And like, you can kind of see that with kids. I remember being so annoyed when I was younger that I'd never broken a bone, because I remember having friends come into school on crutches and everyone would have turns hopping around on the playground on them, and it just looks like so much fun, so I was so annoyed that I never got to do that. But I think there's definitely a difference between that, you know, trying to get attention, especially when you're in a big family, and actually constantly pretending that you have something medically wrong with you. So Beverly gained a lot of weight as a teenager, and as she grew up, she became even more attention-seeking and also quite aggressive. She spent loads of time in hospitals, and it just appeared that she constantly had health issue after health issue. She even went as far as to get her appendix removed when it was perfectly healthy, and then kept interfering with the surgical scar on purpose so that it would take ages to heal. In order to get even more attention, she would self-harm and had to resort to what they called doctor hopping, as doctors started to recognise her behaviours as attention-seeking and refused to treat her for her made-up illnesses. Oddly enough, she happened to go on to train as a nurse, but even in adulthood, she was just really strange still. She hadn't grown out of it. Incidents happened at the college where she was training to be a nurse, but they were never pinned on her. For example, feces were smeared across the walls, curtains were set on fire, but she was never blamed for these instances. Like, this is way beyond the realm of what we could classify as normal by this point. She was a fully grown adult acting like this. She also had a really low attendance rate for her nurse training, and just, again, always used the excuse that she was too ill to turn up. Despite her really, really weird behaviour, shocking attendance, and failure of most of her nursing exams, by 1991 she had managed to get a job at a hospital in Lincolnshire. It was a temporary 6-month contract at the Grantham and Kesteven Hospital, and she was placed on the children's ward. This hospital was really severely understaffed and only had 2 nurses on each day shift and 1 per night shift when she started, which probably explains how she managed to get hired there. On the 7th of February 1991, a 7-week-old baby boy called Liam was admitted to the children's ward with a chest infection. Allett reassured his parents that he was in safe hands and sent them home to rest. Overnight, Allett was left alone with the baby and his condition worsened dramatically. She called an emergency resuscitation team, who were confused by the fact that not a single alarm monitor had gone off when the baby stopped breathing. Liam suffered severe brain damage and was taken off life support by his parents shortly afterwards and died in his father's arms. Allett's reign of terror had begun, and over the next 59 days, would claim the lives of more innocent babies. 2 weeks later, an 11-year-old boy with cerebral palsy, called Timothy, was admitted to the children's ward. The same turn of events happened. Allett was left alone with him and then summoned the emergency resuscitation team. Unfortunately, Timothy died too, and his cause of death was recorded as epilepsy. Just 5 days later, a 15-month-old girl called Kaylee was admitted to the children's ward as she was recovering from a chest infection. 5 days later, with Allett next to her, she went into cardiac arrest. She survived and was moved to another hospital, where the doctors found a strange puncture hole under her armpit. They guessed that this was a result of an accidental injection and just didn't really think too much of it. Luckily, moving hospitals meant that Kaylee managed to survive. Just days later, a 5-month-old boy called Paul was placed in the ward with a mild infection. Alec was looking after him by herself, and just before he was discharged, she called for assistance. He was suffering from insulin shock and nearly went into a coma on 3 separate occasions. The doctors managed to revive him, but couldn't figure out why his insulin levels had fluctuated so much. He was taken to another hospital, and Alec volunteered to ride with him in the ambulance. Luckily, Paul also managed to survive. The next day, a 5-year-old boy called Bradley was in the hospital with pneumonia when he went into unexpected cardiac arrest. He was saved by the resuscitation team, and blood tests showed that his insulin levels were really high. The doctors just couldn't figure out why, but luckily he managed to survive. After this, 2-month-old twin girls were kept in hospital for observation as they had been born prematurely. One of the girls, Becky, was placed into Alec's care, who said that she appeared ill, but the doctors couldn't decipher why. She was sent home with her mum, but died during the night. Pathologists couldn't find a clear cause of death. Because of this, her twin sister, Katie, was admitted to the hospital as a precaution, unfortunately while Alec was working. It wasn't long before she stopped breathing, but she survived, and Alec was praised for acting quickly and getting the doctors to save her life. Alec was a centre of attention, but 2 days later, Katie suffered a similar attack which resulted in the collapse of her lungs. She was transferred to another hospital, where they found that 5 of her ribs were broken and she had suffered severe brain damage. Baby Katie's mum was so grateful to Alec for saving her life that she asked her to be Katie's godmother. Alec accepted, knowing full well that she had inflicted paralysis, cerebral palsy, and vision and hearing damage onto that baby. A 15-month-old baby named Claire was admitted to hospital a few weeks later after having an asthma attack and went into cardiac arrest after being left in Alec's care. Doctors managed to resuscitate her, but after being left alone with Alec for a second time, she suffered a second episode of cardiac arrest and sadly died. Now, it was only after Claire's death that suspicions were raised at the hospital. The doctors started to see the pattern of an unusually high number of cardiac arrests on the children's ward, which all occurred while Alec was working. A post-mortem exam carried out on Claire showed high levels of potassium in her system, as well as traces of drugs that would just never be given to a baby. The police were called and they immediately suspected foul play. The key for the insulin store had been reported as missing multiple times by Alec, and there were missing nursing logs that contained important details relating to patient care. They saw that Alec had been present in all the deaths where there had been cases of unusually high insulin levels in the infants, and they interviewed the parents of the victims. The police even sent a sample of Paul, one of the first victims, blood, to an expert in insulin poisoning. The results showed that while a normal reading for insulin levels for a child of Paul's age was between 10 and 15 millilitres, Paul had more than 47,000 millilitres of insulin in his blood. Let me just repeat that. So the normal level is between 10 and 15 millilitres. Paul had 47,000 millilitres in his blood. It was the second highest level ever recorded in the world, and the first being a doctor who intentionally committed suicide after an insulin overdose. The police searched Alec's house and found a syringe as well as the ward allocation book. They spent hours interviewing her, and she was really just evasive and tried to frame other nurses. She was cocky and acted as if the police would never in a million years get enough evidence to catch her. And to start with, she was correct. The police really struggled to get enough evidence. The issue with having a hospital as a crime scene is that after each murder, the location is completely sterilised and everything that could be considered forensic evidence was disposed of. 2 months after the case was first brought to the police's attention, it received worldwide media coverage. Now, the parents of the victims were actually really quite furious at the police for the whole situation. Like, you'd think they'd be furious at the culprit, but no. One of the parents even hired a private investigator to investigate the police themselves, as they felt that they were trying to stitch up Beverly Alec for a crime she didn't commit. Like, this woman had completely conned these parents into thinking she was some kind, loving nurse who just wanted the best for their babies. But with Beverly Alec now the lead suspect in the case, she was placed on leave from the hospital, and of course, the attacks stopped. She went to live with her friend Tracy and her family, and the attacks, funnily enough, started in Tracy's house in Peterborough. Bleach appeared in Tracy's brother's bed, and the dog had been fed tablets that made him froth at the mouth. Tracy's mum was obviously very concerned, so she questioned Tracy, her brother, and Alec about what had happened. And then Alec told her that she'd seen a poltergeist in Tracy's house, and that it was probably what was responsible for all of these incidents. A short while later, the family and Alec went shopping together, when all of a sudden, Tracy's brother collapsed. He was taken to hospital where doctors concluded that he had had a hypoglycemic attack, and he told them that just before they'd left to go shopping, Alec had made him a drink which he remembered tasted a bit funny as he was drinking it. The police were called, and Alec was once again taken into custody. It was at that point that the police knew Alec was the one who killed Liam, Timothy, Becky and Claire, and had harmed the other babies too. In November of 1991, Beverly Alec, aged just 22, was formally charged with multiple counts of murder, attempted murder, and grievous bodily harm. During her questioning, she was calm and restrained, and didn't really have much of a reaction whatsoever. Now, the police carried out extensive background checks on Alec, which indicated she had very serious personality disorders. These were Munchausen syndrome, as well as Munchausen syndrome by proxy, whereby the sufferer gains attention through illnesses. They do this by either feigning their own illness or self-harming, or alternatively, inflicting injury on someone in their care. And it's actually really quite rare for a person to present with both conditions, but clearly Alec had both. Now, depending on how much of a true crime nerd you are, those two syndromes might ring a bell to you. And if they do, it's more than likely because of the case of Dee Dee and Gypsy Rose Blanchard. Do you remember? The mother who pretended like her daughter was brain damaged and had cancer and couldn't walk, all to get attention, even though she was absolutely fine. Yeah, so that's Munchausen by proxy, because that's the one where you're projecting these made up illnesses onto someone else instead of feigning them for yourself. Yeah, it's obviously much easier to do with children because A, they're either so young that they can't speak up about how they actually feel, or B, they trust the person who's looking after them and then so they truly believe that they're as ill as they're told they are. Anyways, I digress. The police concluded that Alec had stopped getting the attention she so badly craved from feigning her own illnesses, so began to harm children in order to be noticed. However, in interviews, she still point-blank refused to admit what she'd done. After a series of hearings, Alec was charged with 4 counts of murder, 13 counts of attempted murder, and 13 counts of causing grievous bodily harm. In the run-up to her trial, she lost so much weight and developed anorexia, which further indicated the extent of her psychological problems. She lost 70 pounds because of her anorexia, which delayed her trial repeatedly. It wasn't until the 15th of February 1993 that it finally began. An expert took to the stand to tell the jury that it was his opinion that Beverly Alec would never be cured from her Munchausen's or Munchausen's by proxy syndrome, making her a very clear danger to the general public. After a trial that lasted nearly 2 months, of which Alec attended only 16 days due to continued illnesses, she was convicted on May the 23rd, 1993, and given 13 life sentences with a minimum term of 30 years. It was the harshest sentence ever delivered to a female. But rather than going to prison, Alec was incarcerated at Rampton Secure Hospital in Nottingham, a high security facility housing mainly individuals detained under the Mental Health Act. So that is the story of Beverly Alec, also known as the Angel of Death. To be honest, I don't even like this nickname. Like, I know what they're trying to get at with it, but the fact it starts with angel just feels like it lightens the whole situation to me. One of the doctors who used to work with her has called her a cold-blooded, calculated killer, and I have to say that I wholeheartedly agree. She has never expressed any remorse for what she's done, and I believe that she just sees these babies that she's killed and injured as just collateral damage in her quest to be the centre of attention. Anyways, thank you guys for joining me for today's episode, and I hope you enjoyed today's case. If you've listened all the way through to this point, then firstly, thank you so much. And if you could leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, then me and Martha would both be so grateful as it really helps to support the podcast. Remember to also let us know your thoughts. So we're always active on our Instagram, TikTok, and we're also starting to build up our Facebook group. And we'd love to hear your comments on this case and the cases that we've covered in the past. But remember to be loud, be fierce, and don't talk to killers. Bye, guys.